10. Philip teleported home from Brit the Elder's, his heart heavy with woe and his brain buzzing with problems. He materialized outside the door of Brit the Younger's apartment, her living space connected to his despite the tremendous distance and time differentials that separated them, and he thought of her apartment in Atlantis, the building that held his office, and his hut on the outskirts of Ledchurch as one large dwelling. Philip reckoned he'd left Brit the Younger's nearly 2 hours earlier, a long time to just be gone for a walk. Brit would definitely ask him where he'd been, and while he fully intended to tell her, he wanted to do it on his terms. He needed to grease the skids, ease into it, then tell Brit the Younger, his Brit, everything. But he had to make it clear that she must keep her distance. She couldn't interact with Brit the Elder until everything was resolved, because it might just cause the entire universe to crash. He had reason to hope she would be fine with that. She didn't like Brit the Elder anyway. Philip did some quick mental math and a rough Esperanto translation, then said,
Reru, unu duonan, horan.
Philip seemed to remain stationary, but the sun, the shadows, and the people milling around on the street outside all changed. He took a final quiet moment to prepare himself. Then, technically only 30 minutes after he left, Philip entered the apartment. He found Brit the Younger exactly where he'd left her, curled up in her favorite reading chair. She glanced up from her book and smiled. You weren't gone long.
No, I suppose I wasn't. How's the book?
Interesting. But capoeira isn't exactly what I hoped it would be. Nick leaned out from the kitchen.
Philip, do you have the chicken?
Philip moaned and rolled his eyes at his own stupidity.
I'm sorry, I forgot your chicken. I'll pop out and get you one in just a moment.
Nick said, Oh, don't worry about it. I need to go get a few other things anyway.
Oh, good. Still, sorry about that, Nick.
I forgive you.
Thank you,
Philip said. Then after a long pause, he turned back to Brit the Younger.
Look, I'd like to talk to you about something.
Been doing some thinking, eh? Fine. Brit closed her book, placed it on her lap, and looked up at Philip, still smiling. Philip said,
It's about Brit the Elder.
Oh. Brit's smile withered and died. She picked the book back up, opened it, and went back to reading. I don't want to talk about her, she said, quietly, almost as if to herself. Philip said,
I know she's not your favorite person.
Brit the Younger snorted, Not my favorite person. When I'm in a great mood and she's just done something nice for me, she's not my favorite person. Right now, she's pretty close to my least favorite. Even when she decides to be helpful, she does it in the least helpful way possible, then acts like she's some kind of saint for it. You know how when we were off fighting the dragon, she helped Louisa with the wounded?
Yes, I thought that was quite kind of her. For someone with no medical training to jump in and help Atlantis's only trained doctor deal with a flood of injuries from a dragon attack, I'd say that's commendable.
That was. What was less commendable is that she refused to tell me how she helped. So when I'm her, I'll have to figure it out for myself. And she talked Louisa into not telling me either. Then she had the gall to come in here, into my home, to gloat about the fact that she wasn't going to tell me. And to top it all off, just because she thought it was fun, she decided to mess with me a little bit, pretending to remember something wrong just to give me a moment of hope that I might not turn into her someday, all so she could have the fun of snatching that hope away.
Philip stood, looking down at Brit the Younger, stunned into silence by the unexpected ferocity of her response.
Wait a second, Brit said, rising to her feet and dropping her book to the floor. Did she contact you?
No, she hasn't,
Philip noted that. Strictly speaking, this was not a lie.
Good, because if I thought, even for a second, that she was somehow interfering in our relationship, I'd have to go track her down and give her a few choice pieces of my mind.
Do you mean a few choice words, or a piece of my mind? You sort of combine the two.
Yeah, because I'm mad enough to do both at the same time. Seriously, Philip! Tell me if she's bothering you. Oh, I'd love an excuse to go over there.
Philip remembered Brit the Elder's warning that any direct interaction between herself and Brit the Younger could hasten or indeed cause the destruction of the entire universe as they knew it. Philip put what he desperately hoped was a calming hand on Brit the Younger's shoulder.
No, Brit. There's no need to do that. She hasn't contacted me.
Brit took a moment to calm herself.
Sorry I got so worked up. It's just, Philip, you're the one thing I have that she doesn't. Our relationship is kind of the only thing that's really mine. If she did something that messed it up for me, I don't know what I'd do.
I understand.
Good. So, you wanted to discuss Britt the Elder? What's on your mind?
Just that I think it might be for the best if we both avoid her for a while.
Britt the Younger smiled. Fine by me. What brought that on?
Just that while I was on my walk, I realized how much happier you are when you don't have to deal with her.
Britt picked her book up off the floor and returned to her chair.
Good call. I agree to your plan of avoiding my least favorite person. That's a very good idea, Philip. I find that a nice walk can be a good chance to think.
Yes,
Philip said.
I suspect I'll be taking a lot more walks in the future.
Martin stood in the séance room of his workspace in medieval London, a large square room with velvet-draped walls, decorated with four large statues in each corner of the room, facing inward. If one of the locals came looking for Martin's wizardly help, he would identify the four statues as the old gods and the new. But anyone from Martin's time would easily recognize them as Optimus Prime, Boba Fett, Grimace, and the Stig. Martin opened the small silver box that disguised the android smartphone he used to run macros and manipulate the file. He picked a time about 6 months into the future and ran a search. When he found Philip's location, he initiated travel through both time and space. Martin got the momentary impression of being in a smallish, darkish room with one other person, but only for a fraction of a second. Before his eyes could even adjust to the new light level, he transported again, this time against his will and with no control over the destination. Martin found himself standing alone among rows and rows of theater seats, their wooden bottoms folded upward. Martin looked around the room but saw nobody else on the main floor. The balcony and luxury boxes above also seemed empty. The stage curtains were drawn shut. Martin appeared to have the theater to himself. Two powerful spotlights turned on with a mechanical ka-chunk. Brilliant white cones of light shone down from the upper reaches of the theater, illuminating two seemingly random portions of the stage curtain. Martin heard the sound of pulleys turning and rope stretching. The curtain separated, receding to the sides of the stage with surprising speed, revealing two figures in full tuxedos, complete with top hat, tails, and white-tipped walking sticks.
Oh, Lord, Martin moaned.
Yes,
one of the gentlemen said, spreading his arms wide.
I am forced to surmise from your emotional exaltation that you have come to the stunning realization that you are to be the lone witness to a private performance by those magnificent magicians, those preeminent prestidigitators, those accomplished alliterators, yours truly, the sensational Sid, and my cooperative counterpart, the great Gilbert.
Gilbert waved. Hi, Martin.
Martin said, guys, can we just...
Sid brought the tip of his ivory-tipped walking stick down onto the stage floor with a loud bang.
Please! Out of respect for the dignity of the performance, we ask that you hold all questions and comments for the end of the show, when I promise they will be disregarded in due course. Now, at long last and at great personal expense, we present to you a special trick, custom designed for the occasion, entitled Philip's Personal Message to Martin on the occasion of Martin's leap to the future to discuss possible danger to Philip's well-being, posed by what appears to be an angry Jawa.
Gilbert said, we spent a lot more time designing the illusion than we did thinking of a snappy name.
Indeed,
Sid said.
And that surplus of effort on the one will show as vibrantly as the lack of effort above the other, I assure you.
Martin glared at both of them, but folded down a seat and settled in to watch the performance. From somewhere off stage, Martin heard what sounded like a small, poorly rehearsed band playing the final countdown by Europe. Martin shouted,
Arrested Development! Very nice!
Gilbert smiled and tipped his top hat. Two assistants, wearing hooded black velvet robes and white porcelain masks to obscure their faces, came out on stage. One pushed a large steamer trunk on wheels. The other pulled a 15-foot-wide red curtain hanging from a wheeled frame. With much unnecessary rhythmic arm-waving, one assistant opened the trunk. The other reached into the trunk and produced two more robes, which Gilbert and Sid put on in a needlessly dancy manner, whipping them around as much as possible in the process. The assistant then handed them two masks, the same as the white ones the assistants wore, except that Sid's was bright red and Gilbert's bright blue. The two magicians threw their hats and canes off into the wings, put up their hoods, and the trick began in earnest. Gilbert, in the blue mask, stepped into the open trunk and knelt down, while Sid in the red mask pushed the lid closed, sealing him in. Sid wrapped the trunk with a chain, which he fastened with a cartoonishly large padlock. One assistant spun the trunk while the other pulled the rolling curtain in front of it, blocking Martin's view. Sid and the two white-masked assistants pranced rhythmically in a circle around the rolling curtain and the hidden trunk for a few bars. The two assistants moved the rolling curtain off to the side, then they both sprinted into the wings and out of sight. In the center of the stage, Sid, in his red mask and hooded cloak, waved his hands over the trunk. The lid of the trunk shook, then opened a crack, straining against the chain. A pair of hands worked their way out through the gap, holding two thin metal implements, and began working on picking the lock. Sid ran to the rear of the stage and darted behind the rolling curtain. As the padlock sprung open and fell to the floor, the curtain also fell, revealing that Sid had vanished. The trunk sprang open and Sid stood up from inside, having somehow transported from behind the screen into the trunk. Sid removed his red mask and hood, held his arms out wide, and turned around, revealing a message embroidered into the back of his robe.
"Martin, you're embarrassing yourself. Just drop it. Philip."
From behind him, Martin heard a voice say,
"Good bit of advice there, I reckon."
Martin turned to see Gilbert sitting in the row behind him, looking exaggeratedly relaxed, leaned back with his feet kicked up on the back of the seat next to Martin.
"Uh-huh," Martin said without enthusiasm. "Did you think this whole thing was going to impress me? You realize I can teleport from place to place, too."
"Yeah," Gilbert said. "But the impressive bit is that we didn't. What you just saw was all illusion. No actual magic involved."
"None?"
"None," Sid said. "All misdirection and a trick padlock. We run an honest magic show, using the traditional methods of deception and trickery."
"That's right," Gilbert said. "Instead of cheating the audience by using a real magic like some people we could name."
He lightly kicked Martin in the shoulder for emphasis.
"I don't do a magic show."
"Yet,"
Gilbert said.
"Whatever. So I assume Philip put you up to all this?"
Sid nodded.
"Correct. And he didn't give you any information other than that I should drop it?"
"And that you're embarrassing yourself," Gilbert added, "which we could have seen for ourselves."
"Fine. I'll just have to go find Philip somewhere and somewhen else and talk to him there."
Martin stood up, pulled his ornate silver box out of his pocket, opened it, jabbed his finger angrily at the screen of his smartphone, and disappeared. 5 seconds later, Martin reappeared in the exact spot he just left.
"Damn it!"
Sid smiled broadly.
"Yes! Philip set up a macro that will redirect you here if you try to contact him in the future. Now, if you'll just turn your back for a second, we'll reset the trick and do it again."
Martin glared at Sid, poked a few more times at his smartphone, and disappeared. After 15 seconds of waiting, Gilbert said,
"I think he's gone for good this time."
One of the two assistants walked out onto the stage from the wings. He pulled off his mask, revealing that he was a teenage boy with sandy brown hair. The crumpled mass of the rolling curtain shifted seemingly on its own, then slid to the side as a trap door hinged open and the other assistant, now wearing a red mask, climbed out. She removed the red mask, the white mask underneath it, and her hood. She looked close to the same age as the boy and bore an undeniable family resemblance, although she sported a thick mass of wavy jet black hair.
"So that was him," Sid said. "What did you think?"
"He was so young,"
the girl said. "And angry," the The boy added, really angry. Sid nodded.
Indeed. I'm sure he's mellowed with age. Most men do.
The boy said, they get wiser and stop letting things bother them?
No, Gilbert said. Things bother them more. It's just they don't have the energy to act on it like they used to.